Okay, everybody, good afternoon and welcome to those who are here live. For those who are not here live, there are 8,000 people in the library at the live part of the shiur, and so you're lucky you didn't come because there wouldn't have been room for you.
No, I asked the
question. And today is Wednesday, March 22nd. And we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues for our weekly class in Parashat HaShavua, Lunch and Learn. We took care of the first part. We lunched, and now we shall learn. For those of you who are on Facebook Live, a few minutes ago I sent out a link with the source sheet. You could find that on a link, or you can go to sefaria.com. And search my name, Barry Gelman, and you'll find all of my source sheets. And the one you're looking for is called Mirror, Mirror on the Wall. Okay. Half the fun of giving classes is thinking of catchy titles.
Yeah.
You should ask, what's the other half of fun?
We don't need it, but for outsiders, maybe.
Right. Okay. So Let's get started. So this week we're gonna read the double parsha, Parshat Vayakhel Pekudei, and this class is gonna focus on the kior, the translated into English as the laver, which probably doesn't help anybody understand what it is. It's a bowl.
Kior. That,
yeah, oh. But I'm trying to. Say it in English, and here it says laver, which a basin, a bowl, right, a kior, like Shula said, a kior. And the kior is singled out, a sink, right, that's the modern word for a sink, right. The kior is singled out in terms of what it was made of, where it was. There's details given about the kior that are not given about any of the other kelim in the Mishkan. And we are going to try to focus on what's so special about the kior that it was made out of copper, as also as we're specifically told, or what's special about where it was placed. The verse in question is Vayas et ha-kior nechoshet v'et kano nechoshet. He made the laver of copper and its stand of copper. Bimarot hatzovot asher tzavu petach ohel moed, from the mirrors of the women who perform tasks at the entrance of the tent of meeting. What is the significance of this fact that the Torah tells us that the kior was made out of mirrors? Who cares what they were made of? We know that the people donated all sorts of precious metals to the communal funds in order to build the Mishkan. We're not told that the men donated this, and this people donated this. In this case, we're specifically told that the kior was made out of out of the mirrors. So let's talk about that. We're gonna see two different approaches actually.
Maybe to, that it was the copper was so shiny and clean that it looked like a mirror.
Well,
because what, glass?
It's true. You're right. It was shiny and clean, but it doesn't just say that it looked like a mirror. It says it was made from the mirrors, meaning this kior was fashioned from mirrors.
But it was
That's the way copper mirror. Yeah, they didn't have glass mirrors back then. Took a piece of copper, and you buffed it, and you shined it, you looked in it, and presto changeo, you saw yourself. With a tan. So it was a copper mirror. It wasn't a mirror of glass that we're familiar with, but it was a copper mirror. So why are we told that they were specifically made out of mirrors? Okay, so we're going to see two diametrically opposed explanations as to why the mirrors were chosen, which just goes to remind us that interpreting the Torah leaves us with many, many options. And maybe you'll come up with a third. We're going to see two, and then we'll come up with another idea. We'll see another idea at the end, also somewhat related to this. Maybe you'll come up with a third approach. So, first we'll look at the Ibn Ezra. One school of thought we will look at first from the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra I don't have in Hebrew, but I have it. I don't have it in English. I have it in Hebrew. V'hine hayu b'Yisrael nashim ovdot Hashem shesaru mita'avot zeh ha'olam. There were amongst the Jewish people some women who separated themselves, who left ta'avot zeh ha'olam, who separated themselves from worldly temptation. V'natnu marotehen nidava. And they gave up, they gave away their mirrors as a dedication, as a donation to the Mishkan. Ki ein lahem tzorech od lehityafut. It's a beautiful word, right? Lehityafut. They did, beautiful word. See what I did there? They did not, they no longer needed the mirrors in order to beautify themselves. They gave up any desire to beautify themselves. And that's why there were extra mirrors with which to make the kior, right? So now, that's nice. What is this notion of this being in the entrance of the tent of meeting? So what did they do if they weren't worried about being beautiful and weren't worried about perhaps other worldly concerns? Rak ba'ot yom yom el petach ohel moed lehitpalel v'lishmoa divrei hamitzvot. This is, by the way, this is very radical. Right, these are women who spent all day in yeshiva. Right, we don't have that so much. Right, what did they do? They came every day to the entrance of the Ohel Moed, like it says in the Psukim, the Zuntait, like it says in the Psukim, to daven, to pray, and to listen to the words of the mitzvot. V'zeu asher tzavu petach Ohel Moed. This is why it says that they gathered or they performed tasks at the entrance of the Ohel Moed, ki hayu rabot. By the way, this is not only, this is one of few women, right? This was a large group of women who gave up their concern for beauty, and therefore they gave up their mirrors, and they came every day to the entrance of the Mishkan, to daven and to hear prayers. So that explains the pasuk, explains all the questions we had. The women who gave up these marot are given special mention in the Torah, right? Perhaps as a way to honorable mention, right? As a way to reward them or to indicate what a wonderful thing that they did. They gave up their mirrors. Not only that, they gave up their mirrors and they used to come el petach ohel moed. They used to come to the entrance of the ohel moed.
Excuse me, can you ask?
Yes,
something?
Please. Now,
okay, so. Excuse me for my ignorance, but I don't understand how you came to the conclusion that we are talking about women.
It says nashim of
those. Tzovot, tzovot, together, not tzovim.
V'hine hayu b'Yisrael nashim.
No, no. Chana's question is, where did the Ibn Ezra come up with the idea that these mirrors were donated by women? That's your question, right?
Okay.
Atzovot already implies that it's
nekevah. Atzovot. In the pasuk.
Okay, I don't know what's our question.
The question is, why do we assume these are women?
How Rebbe Gelman?
It wasn't me. I read the Ibn Ezra.
How the interpretation?
Give me a break.
Okay.
Because I think it says tzovot. Tzovot. Tzovot.
But I think that's related to the Maraot.
So what else?
Not to women.
Okay.
His comments.
Okay. A fair question. I will tell you the following. I will tell you the following.
You understand my
question? I understand your question. It's an excellent question.
Yes.
I'm not an expert in Hebrew grammar. You are certainly an expert in Hebrew grammar. I thought tzovot refers
to
female. No.
Plural female.
No, no. Here's how I read the pasuk. Chana, I'll give two answers. Maybe both of them are right. Maybe both of them are wrong.
Okay.
Maybe at least one of them will be right.
Okay.
Vayasa takior nechoshet ve'et kano nechoshet b'mar'ot hatzov'ot asher tzav'u petach omoed. From the mirrors. Now the pasuk actually translates it like we do. Of the women, hatsov, the women who perform the tasks, at the Hatzovot is the women who gathered, right? Not the mirrors.
In my vision, there was a kior and there were mirrors that stood somehow.
No, it says no. That's clear. Vayas atakinor nechoshet ve'et kanon nechoshet bimarot, from or with.
What?
The question is, who brought the mirrors?
What?
I think Tzovot refers to women, but even if it doesn't, I will tell you the following. I have, this is not necessarily exhaustive, but I've seen no Parshan who suggests otherwise.
Okay.
All the Parshanim.
Okay.
That could be, by the way, that could be a sociological comment. Men maybe just didn't have mirrors back then, right? It could be also just an assumption that it was a woman's
woman's thing.
Yeah,
Marilyn.
That's a good question.
Marilyn brought something up. The Ibn Ezra is explaining the pasuk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the pasuk it said the women.
Well, that's the translation of the pasuk.
That's
a translation. It's not. It's not an exactly accurate translation. Right. Yeah. Good question. Yes, let me know. Okay, good. So now, but the Ibn Ezra is saying something which is very interesting, right? He's saying that the Torah is honoring the women and considering, it sounds like the Ibn Ezra is saying that the Torah is considering these women of a special status, right? Because they've given up, in his words, ta'avot ze ha'olam. Right, they've taken on an aesthetic of right that they're denying themselves a sort of this physical enjoyment.
They went right more into spiritual things.
Right, but at the expense of physical. And it sounds like that the Ibn Ezra is saying that the Torah is at least honoring them for this.
They gave donation to build the kior,
and he's not the only one. Let's look at the Sephorno.
I don't like it, but we're going to discuss it later.
Yeah, right. He's not the only one. Let's look at the Sephorno. Asher tzavu petach ha'moed, approaching this holy domain was intended to show that they wanted to hear the words of the living God. This is what was an acceptable practice. And then anyone who wanted to seek out the Lord would go to the tent of meeting. The women who had donated these mirrors indicated that they had overcome their sense of vanity. They considered jewelry and the need for it a human weakness. Moreover, they knew that the time when these mirrors had been of constructive use was past. I'm just going to turn off for a second. That's a very cryptic statement at the end.
You know,
I think I know what he's talking about. We'll get to it in a little bit later. But it's sort of cryptic what the Sephorno means, that the time for the use of the mirrors was passed. But before he gets to that, he says something very similar to the Sephorno, right?
Sephorno and
the Ibn Ezra. I'm sorry, the Ibn Ezra and the
also Ibn Ezra.
Number two is the Ibn Ezra. Number three is the Sephorno. Number four is the Chizkuni, right? So the Sephorno, which is
Parshanim,
right? Yeah. Can. So the Sephorno is saying something very similar to the Ibn Ezra. That these women gave up, overcame their meaning. That it's actually the English makes it more clear, right? They've overcome their sense of vanity, and in the Torah's view, that's a good thing, right? So it's at least according to these parshanim, that it's a good thing that they've overcome their sense of vanity.
So and, all the parshanim are agreeing with it?
So no, not all. You can never say all. So far, two.
Okay.
So far, two.
So,
yes.
In my opinion, it's incidental talking about the nashim. The main thing is the kior, and it was made of maror.
No, but I think that's the point. I think it's not incidental.
About the women.
That's a good.
Parsha also, there is replete with references to each and every individual who brought their donations, as it were. Right. It says even at the beginning of the parsha earlier on, it said every man, every woman. It says all the women did this, all the men did this, everyone brought whatever they could. So here it's a further.
Here it's explicit, right, exactly.
It's saying,
okay. So I don't think, at least, Shula, at least these Parshanim, one second, let's have it. At least these Parshanim do not think that it's incidental.
Okay,
these Parshanim think it's very important. And that's why they're making a big deal out of it. And not only is it important that the women brought it, but they think it's a a wonderful thing that the women have given up their sense of beauty.
Very insulting, male perspective. Because a vain woman, let me tell you, would catch her reflection in more than a mirror. There's the water and all sorts of things. So, but whenever there's, even if you just go back to the Second World War, where everybody gave their gold, you know, their rings and everything,
right?
They gave it to us. It seems to me that, you know, you as a woman, you'd be delighted that you could give something,
right?
So I and you know, perhaps they could make more mirrors. Perhaps they could catch their reflection in something else. I find it personally insulting that these men would make up that to imply that we gave up our vanity. I doubt that a woman really can do that, to be honest with you.
Okay, so it's not insulting. One second, hold on. I don't think it's insulting. You're saying it's not possible. There's a big difference, right? It's actually, why would it be insulting to say that someone gave up their sense of vanity? That's not insulting.
You know, the nuns, when the nuns became nuns.
Vanity is a bad thing. That's why it's called vanity. Concern for our physical appearance is not a bad thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? There's a difference.
But that evolved into the nuns. The nuns do not use mirrors when they get dressed. It's the same thing. They leave the worldly things behind. And I think this is where it came from. Because that's the
right.
One
so the question, I think
no
the
mirrors.
Question Elisheva is raising is this a Jewish value? Right? Is it a Jewish value to not be concerned with this? And here it seems that the Ibn Ezra and the Sephorno, at least, and we're going to see the Chizkuni, are in fact saying that the Torah does honor that. Right, the Torah honors that move.
Because of modesty, but is it really that bad to be looking at your reflection? Is that
That's the question. Is this the Torah value or not? Yeah. And that's
Can I say something?
Well, they're giving the Ibn Ezra and the Sephorno seems they're making a value judgment.
Yes.
They're saying it is bad, and therefore it was good that they gave it up. That's what
my question is. It's very important, the beauty of the woman. All when discover hell, emphasize.
Right, the Torah often.
So
right,
really
that's a very good
sort
point.
Sort of like an obligation of the woman to keep herself pretty. To
right, there are many statements like that. Right, we're going to see another approach.
That's what
to
I
right?
wanted to say. I mean, on one hand, do you want to look at your wife that she doesn't look good, that she doesn't take care of herself? I'm honest with you.
That's right. It's a good
at
point.
On the other hand,
settle down.
Those Nesharim ladies, that they shave their hair and the whole thing and they look homely, I'm sorry to say it, maybe they took it from here.
Well, I don't want to pass judgment
on
them. I would hope that they may look homely to you, but maybe they look homely to their husbands.
That's why they get witch.
Right? Okay, here we go. Hold on one second. We're crossing the line, Chevra. We're crossing the line. We're crossing the line from trying. We're crossing the line from trying to explain this to passing judgment on a whole society of people. Let's not do that. And let's just try to understand what's going on here, okay?
It's a blessed relief for the women to not have to concern themselves any longer.
That's great.
Good, we can just get up and be ugly and still love.
Right, I could. Right.
Why
that's
is
wonderful. Okay.
Ugly?
Okay, so let's look at the Chizkuni.
If I just, they're honoring that if we're giving up how we look, I don't like it.
Let's look at the Chizkuni. Okay, that's a fair perspective. We're going to see it in a minute. Let's look at the Chizkuni. The Chizkuni says, with the mirrors of the serving women, the word marot is based on eyesight. The laver was placed between the entrance to the tabernacle and the copper altar, slightly north of center. It was placed there so that the women who had contributed their mirrors could see it from the section in the courtyard reserved for women. It would also serve as a reminder that women whose husbands suspected them of infidelity without having proof that could be presented at the court and who had denied the accusation would have to drink the bitter waters drawn from the water in the laver and would risk their lives by doing so if they had lied. So here, the placement of the kior is not in order to remind us that the women who have given up their concern for vanity and otherworldly matters came to the Mishkan to daven and to hear divrei hamitzvot, as the Ibn Ezra says, right? Words of the mitzvot. But here, it's related, but not exactly, that here the kior was placed there to sort of remind women, don't step out of line, right? Don't step out of line in a way that your husband is going to suspect you, because if that does happen, you're going to have to drink the mace sota, the special sota water potion that would prove whether the woman was innocent or not, which is also a little bit of a nod, right, towards not getting carried away with physical beauty, not doing it in a way that's going to attract you to other men, right? All of these, the Ibn Ezra, the Sephorno, the Chizkuni, they're all sort of out of the same general school of thought, which is that this, the Kior was sort of a repudiation, right, of maybe any concern at all, if you want to take it to an extreme level, or certainly over-concern with one's looks, especially, right, especially if one is going to do it to the point where they attract the attention of others, which may lead to infidelity. Okay, so that so all three of these, the Chizkuni comes in from a little bit of a different angle, but all three of these seem to be saying that the purpose of donating the mirrors, right, was, and building the kior out of mirrors was as a reminder of either some of the very righteous women of that day who didn't concern themselves with beauty, or as a warning, right, to the women of that day, just everyone, we need to be careful about our.
Why can't they just give donation the meal without all that thing?
Yes.
Okay. Without what thing? Without all what thing? One second. Without all what thing?
It's a little story incidental.
Okay, the idea that I'm giving up the way I look, or that I give up if I cheated on my husband. I mean, it's sometimes I cannot. It's like, in my opinion, we're putting the women down.
Okay, so hold on a second. We're not finished. So you're right. I understand that especially this third one, the Chizkuni.
The mirror, the same thing. If right? You ask me, I have jewelry.
But the question is, you have to understand how Parshanut works. The question is, why is this singled out?
Yes.
The question. Meaning, before, as Daniel said, beforehand, you were told that everyone brought so much that actually we had to tell people to stop ringing. So why is it singled out that the kior was made out of the mirrors? Once the Torah singles it out, it should raise our eyebrows, and we should ask the question, why is the Torah telling us this?
So why would it be for everyone, women and men, that wash their hands, need to look inside of themselves?
That's your explanation. That's beautiful. Okay. But now you're being guilty of the same thing you just said you don't like.
No, but it's for everyone.
You don't like women, right? Okay, so that's your interpretation. That's lovely. Elisheva.
If this was so, from when I was very young, you had to look good and wear a nice hat, and goodness knows what happens on Yom Kippur with people that only come for that day. How come it didn't stick? How come if you're going to make such a big deal out of it, how come it just isn't culturally Jewish?
Why? Because human nature is not like this, right? That's why the Torah makes a big deal out of this. Because this was against human, this is against human nature. And that's why the Torah is honoring them.
Even the beautiful shadows.
Women dressed
for right. So for one second, hold on. Hold on, one second. Hold on, one second. Elisheva, that's a very good point. So on the one hand, it's against human nature, and that may be okay. Meaning, just because it's human nature, we'll put it in the positive. Human nature, I think, is to want to present ourselves in the best way possible. And so it could be that despite the Ibn Ezra and the Sephorno's explanation, right, it could be that it didn't stick because it's not the way that people are wired, and it may not even be what Judaism asks of us, right? It could be that the Ibn Ezra and Sephorno are pointing at, even though the Ibn Ezra says rabot, that there are a lot like this, it could be that this was a unique circumstance, right? That these women acted in a way which we would call, you know, super righteous, right? Which is not necessarily what is asked of us or expected of us. It could be.
Maybe it depends what the purpose of the kior, if it's to wash your hands and purify you. So maybe it's nice to know that, make connection, that the kior is made with something to present purity to
right.
The women.
Could be. Good. So now, so let's look at the Samson Raphael Hirsch's explanation, which is the opposite, right? Very different of what we saw in the other ones.
I just say something with all this, with women not being attracted. Do you think men notice? Do you think your husband or
okay,
your
I don't want to talk
no,
about that.
No, I'm just we saying. I'm just saying. I think that all this was between the women. It had nothing to do with the men.
I thought of another.
We're going
to
see Samson Raphael Hirsch now on the second page, which is third page, source number 5. All right, here we go. So he's wondering about the same thing. Right? Why are we specifically talking about the mirrors? Okay, b'maraot hatsov ot. To carry out an idea in material which is appropriate to that idea. Source number 5.
Oh, okay.
Is expressed by aseh bi. Okay? So let's just skip down to the third line. So that when it says, v'yasa takiyur b'maraot, the shape and the nature of the materials out of which the kiyur was made are designated as being as important as the actual raw material itself for the idea which the kiyur was to symbolize. It is deeply significant that the vessel of the sanctuary, which was to represent the moral keeping holy of one's acts and efforts, kiddush yadayim v'raglayim, right? The Kohanim, before they went into the Mishkan to do the Avodah, they sanctified, they washed their hands and feet, right? So it's about sanctifying our physical efforts, was made out of the women's mirrors, Mirrors are articles which lay stress on the physical bodily appearance of people being an object of special consideration, so that it was shown that the physical sensual side of human beings is not merely not excluded from the sphere, which you could argue what the Ibn Ezra and the Chizkuni were saying. The women were excluding physical beauty from the sphere of the holy. And Hirsch is saying, not only is it not excluded, which is, right, is not merely not excluded from the sphere, which is to be sanctified by the Beit HaMikdash, but that it is the first and most essential object of this sanctification, right? The very object used to sanctify our hands and feet before going in to the holiest place in the world, the Mishkan, was made out of the mirrors which are used to beautify ourselves. That's a totally different symbolism, right? That's the point is, well, we're supposed to sanctify the beauty. We're supposed to sanctify the physical. So we use the item which focuses most on our physicality as the means by which to sanctify our physical acts.
That's really what I meant.
Right. So whenever you present a class, you have to decide the order of sources. So I presented the first two sources first. I didn't quite realize the strong negative reaction it would muster up. At least I got your attention and got you ready for this one. After all, at rock bottom, as man has complete free will in moral matters, it is just this side of human nature which is necessary to come under the influence of the Mikdash. Meaning, the Torah never expects us to totally relieve ourselves of physical activity and desire. It wants us to sanctify them, right? So that's why I said earlier, it could be that the Ibn Ezra and the Sephorno are expressing an extreme view. The normative view may be more the one explained here by Rav Hirsch.
Who is that? Who says that? Hirsch?
This is Samson Raphael Hirsch. Okay. After all, rock bottom, a man has complete free will in moral matters. It is just this side of human nature which is necessary to come under the influence of Mikdash if the sanctification of life which is aimed at is to be achieved. This designation of the Kiyor emerges with great significance in the laws of Sota. So, right, it's a similar, you could connect this into laws of Sota too. You could now take the Chizkuni and look at it in a positive way. Right, the Chizkuni is saying that the fact that the Sota water was held in the basin, which was made out of the mirrors, is a way to say that we should, husbands and wives should use their natural desires for each other and not for anyone else. That's positive and negative. It's not all negative. There's a negative way to use all of our physical desires, and there's a positive way to use them. And Hirsch is saying that this symbolizes the use of them in a positive way. Now, Elisheva, do you want to add something?
Well, I think it might be a bit dated now, but I was thinking if the original idea was right, then when we cover the mirrors when somebody dies, that's not for men not to look at themselves, only for women.
It's for everybody.
For everybody.
I think that's, like I said earlier, I think this is really referencing a sociological reality that I just think the women had mirrors then and the men didn't. But now it's different. At least that's the way the Parshanim see it. Again, the Parshanim never, all they say it's all the women bringing it.
Much more beautiful, much more.
Pardon?
The argument you've just given is much more beautiful, much more acceptable, much more palatable than the first one.
Many would agree with you. That's correct. Yes.
Glad we documented that.
Okay. Now, where does Hirsch get his idea from? It could be that Hirsch gets his idea from source number 6 on the next page from Rashi. Right? Benot Yisrael hayu biyadam mar'ot shera'ot pahen kishehen mitkatshot. Again, this is a midrash. Also, Chana, the assumption is they were women. Okay?
Right.
The women possessed mirrors of copper into which they used to look when they adorned themselves. Va'af otan lo ikvu milavilin vata mishkan. And they didn't hesitate to bring these as a donation to the Mishkan. V'haya mo'es Moshe bahen. Moshe didn't want them. Right? Moshe wanted to reject them. Mivnei she'usin li'etzer hara. Right? Moshe is like the Ibn Ezra a little bit. Moshe is saying, I'm not going to take these mirrors, which are used for vanity, right? Again, either over concern, or maybe Moshe said there should be no concern, right? But he didn't like it. He felt that these were used for vanity. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu kabel. God says, no, you have it all wrong, Moshe. You have to accept them. Ki elu chavivin alai min hakol. These are the most dear contributions to me of all that anyone else brought. She'al yedehem he'emidu hanashim tzivaot rabot b'mitzrayim. This is a play on the word tzivaot in the pasuk, right? B'marot hatzovot asher tzavu petach ha'moed. Because of these mirrors, there were legions of babies born in Egypt. K'sheyu ba'alehen yigeim ba'avodat perach. When the husbands would come home, all tired out from slavery, hayu holchot umolichot lahem machal umishteh, the women would fix them dinner, something to eat and drink, umachilot otam venot lo tamarot, after they fed them, they would then take the mirror, and each v'cholachat ro'a atzma im ba'ala, and each gaze at herself in the mirror together with her husband, umishtadla to bidvarim, and they would try to endear themselves to the husbands with words. Lomar ani na'em imcha. I guess that, I'm not sure exactly how that works. I am more beautiful than you. I don't know how that works. Umitoch kach mevi'ot liba'alehen lidei ta'ava. And then they would entice their husbands. Nizkakot lahem umitabrot v'yoldot sham. Which led to lots of children being born in Egypt. Shenemar tachat ha'tapuach o'artich. From Shira Shirim, Vizesh and Emar bin Marot Hatsov Ot, the mirrors of the women who reared the hosts, right? They had hosts, many and many children. So this is, I think, exactly what Hirsch is saying. There's nothing wrong with beauty. There's nothing wrong with beauty when the beauty is used to attract a husband to a wife. There's nothing wrong with that. Not only is nothing wrong with that, that's something positive about that. That's what allowed the Jewish people to survive in Egypt. If not that, maybe they would have died out from the people dying from natural causes and from all the hard work, but they kept having more and more. Right? That's what the Jews complain about to Paro, right? Ki chayotena. They're having children like animals. Right? They're gone one day, back tomorrow with kids like animals. They go into the fields and have children, right? Or there's just too, they're having large litters. There's another suggestion of what that means. So I think Hirsch is building off of this notion of Rashi, that physical things are holy if used in a sanctified way. So we see, right, two diametrically opposed explanations of why the Kior was built out of the mirrors, whether or not this sort of aesthetic move away from any physical beauty is a positive thing or not, right? We saw the Ibn Ezra, we saw the Chizkuni, and on the one hand, we see Rashi, and we see Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch on the other, giving us two very different approaches to what's going on. I know you like this because it's much quieter now.
Yeah. Who is Rav Israel?
Oh,
so, so I like him too.
Ah, right.
Oh, we're so shocked.
Okay. So I'm glad everyone is over there, horror and shocked.
It was nice of them to bring the marot to for the kiyo.
Right, not because they were giving up their beauty, but as a symbol. They want to give it as a symbol to show that beauty is also holy. Right? And the thing that helps us become beautiful is also holy. Now, just another... Yeah, Chana.
No, I think the last sentence that you just said, I think it's something that's like a thread that goes through Judaism, that everything that we do, we have to do it in a holy way.
Yes,
so
correct.
All the physical has to be holy.
Right.
Like we have
yes.
to put our mind to do even a table that you put food on it or whatever it
exactly.
is. Exactly. You make it holy.
Exactly. And what you're really talking about is a very famous statement by Nachman, he's the Ramban, on the Pasuk in Vayikra that says, Kedoshim Tihiyu.
Right.
Right. You shall be holy. And the commentators sort of wonder, what does that mean? It's so vague. I have a whole book of mitzvot that says I have to keep kosher, and I have to keep the holidays, and I have all the interpersonal rules. What does Kedoshim Tihiyu add? So the Ramban says
everything
it adds by saying there are certain things that maybe even the Torah allows you to do, but it doesn't mean you should do them. Right? The Torah allows you to eat, but it doesn't mean you should be a glutton. Right? The Torah allows you to drink, but it doesn't mean you should be a drunk. Right? Everything that we do has to be kedoshim to you, has to have a sense of sanctity, a sense of balance, right? That's what it's talking about. Yes?
Maybe it's also about attachment, because you could just see that little lady that's running after her mirror saying, I really don't want to give it up. That's like idol worship. So maybe it's about attachment
right.
to the mirrors.
Right. By the way, many commentaries say the word kadosh means lifrosh, to separate ourselves from. There may be certain things that are mutar, that are allowed, but we separate ourselves from them anyway. By the way, that's why marriage is called kiddushin, because it separates the woman and the man from everybody else. They're just allowed to be with each other. Now, biblically, the man's allowed to have more than one wife, but so really it applies to the woman.
Or they're kiddushin
right?
to each other.
But it means separates. It says this woman now is kadosh, meaning she's separate. She's distinct. She's not allowed to be with anyone else. Okay. Let's just end with two beautiful comments. First, I came across this from Yisrael Rosenberg from Yeshivat Hezder Male Adumim. He's a living, breathing rabbi there. He makes a beautiful statement about this. Because again, he's wondering, what's the big deal? So you give a little mirror. The Torah needs to give a special pasuk for you because you gave a little mirror. So he says something so profound. V'ulayav shalomar, shamar eh hi chefetz merkazi b'chaya isha. The mirror is a central aspect, right, of a woman's life, right? It's an accessory. It's a central accessory to a woman's life. I don't want to get into whether it's true for men or not. I think, again, he's talking about this perspective. Shebo hi bochenet et atzma umit aferet. She judges herself, right, through that mirror and makes herself more attractive. Hayom amnam yesh kol echad v'echad kama marot. Nowadays, people have lots of mirrors. Ulam bizmanam terumat hamarot haya ba hakrava gidola umesirut nefesh. Back then, giving away your mirror was a hakrava gedola, a major dedication, and an act of misiro nefesh. It's a sacrifice, a huge sacrifice. People didn't have a lot of them, so it was a big deal to give away your mirror. Shechein b'ikvot zot lo haytalehen marelis takelba, because if they gave away their mirror, they didn't have a mirror. Not like the Ibn Ezra and the Chizkuni who's saying the woman gave away their mirror because they didn't want it anymore. He's saying they gave it away despite the fact that they want it, which makes it even a bigger sacrifice. They did want to be beautiful. There's nothing wrong with that. Some of my best friends are beautiful, right? They did want to be beautiful,
all of us,
right? Are. Of course. But despite the fact that they wanted to be beautiful, they gave away their mirror. And they didn't have another one in their pocketbook. That was it. One per person. Tzarich liyot muda shemisirut nefesh eina davka bidrim gedolim. It should be known that sacrifice is not only about giving away big things or being big sacrifice. Ela gam bedvarim haktanim. It's also about small things. Gidola mizot, even more important than this. Yesham divarim shakravatam lechad hi mesirat nefesh gidola. It's also true that there are certain things that one person will give away, or we could say a certain amount of money that someone will give, which for them is a great sacrifice. And for someone else, it's meaningless. Right? I mean, he's trying to contemporize the question. Right? Back then, giving away a mirror was a big deal. It's hard for us to contemplate that. He says, what we could learn from that is even looking around in our own circle. Oh, that person only gave $18. Well, maybe for that person, $18 is a big deal. And another person gives $18, it's loose change. It's what they have in their pocket when the day is over, right? And we have to be, understanding and being able to see the other people's perspective. So I think he makes two beautiful points that the back then giving away your mirror was a big deal, and they didn't give it away because they didn't want it. They gave it away despite the fact that they did want it. Now I think that Rabbi Rosenberg. His idea is also expressed by the Ralbag who came first. I'm not sure if Rabbi Rosenberg saw the Ralbag, but if we start in the Ralbag, which is the last source on the final page, he says as follows. He says,
same thing.
The Kivar Nikbitsu, hold on 1 second. Right. The second line. The Kivar Nitkaptsu Tseva Mehemlet Dev Elu Hamarot. There was a lot of them. Right? Lefisha Lohayalahem Nechoshet Acher Lahashlim Hamalacha. They needed brass to make copper to make the Nechoshet, and so everyone gave it. Vizem Mora Al haflagat nidvat liban. This shows the greatness of their generosity. Lahavi hamitztarech lezot hamelacha, to bring what's necessary for this melacha. Again, maybe like Rabbi Rosenberg was saying, he fleshes that a little bit more because they didn't have any. It was a big deal, right? So he makes the Ralbag makes a similar claim that this shows their generosity. Again, and Rosenberg fleshes it out because maybe they only had one mirror. So again, just to review, we see diametrically opposed views here about beauty, perhaps alluded to in the Ibn Ezra and the Sephorno on the one hand, and Rashi and Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch on the other hand. And then we have this beautiful statement by Rabbi Rosenberg that it could have been, maybe that's why the Torah singles it out. It was a huge sacrifice to give away the mirrors, because they wanted to look beautiful, like Rashi. It's a good thing. But despite that, they're willing to sacrifice that possibility in order to give it out. And the reminder that we have to give people the benefit of the doubt and recognize that what we may think is a small contribution to them may actually be a great sacrifice and a huge contribution.
Next time you start with this.
You think I should start with the stuff that's going to make you happy next time? I kept you interested. All right. Have a wonderful day, everybody.